Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris Buchanani. I am Jim Galante. We are all set for an hour of Penn State football talk. Chris, where else are we going to start but the news of the week? Old friend, Bill O'Brien, in a new place. How about it? What's your first reaction?
My first reaction is that it hurts my heart a little bit. I've already had to live through watching Larry Johnson Sr. bolt directly from Happy Valley to Columbus and, you know, do what he does, which is recruit elite defensive linemen and then develop them into NFL draft prospects. This one, I don't know. It's not quite as raw, I guess, since LJ was going directly from Penn State to Ohio State. But it's going to be tough, man. It is going to be tough when I turn on my TV in late August or early September and I see Bill O'Brien dressed in scarlet and gray. Rough.
Do you know, for me, Chris, in this – it doesn't bother me at all. It surprised me a bit. But the reason why I don't have that raw feeling about it is I was never a Bill O'Brien guy.
So this is interesting to me. Let me interrupt you there for a second, Jim, and then finish your thought. But I just want to say, while I'm thinking of it, I think my social group, you know, the folks I tailgate with, my buddies from college – you know, the guys on Obligatory, top to bottom, just all Bill O'Brien fans, all love Bill. And so I have learned in the succeeding years that not every Penn State fan is a Bill O'Brien fan. And so I think it's still a minority of the fan base, no offense to you, but nevertheless, it's a larger contingent than I would have thought who were not big O'Brien folks. So I'm interested to hear more about this.
Well, let me put it to you this way. When he came in, he was in a position that he couldn't fail, okay? There was no failing because Penn State was placed in such a unique situation. Was a national story where Bill O'Brien comes in from outside as, I don't want to say the savior, but he wasn't part of it, so he could not. He didn't have to shoulder any of the blame for what happened. None of the stench was on him, okay?
Right. He could deflect any criticism related to the scandal or anything, really, at Penn State prior to his arrival. And any outcome after the sanctions would have been at least excused, if not completely tolerated, because of the sanctions. Sure.
Exactly. And you add to it the national story, the sanctions, Penn State – there was this national impression that Penn State was devastated and right off the bat by sanctions and players leaving.
Right.
Well, as it turned out, the players leaving wasn't as damaging as we all thought it could be, in
sure.
my opinion.
Yeah.
The second part to it was the sanctions. The sanctions really should not have hurt the first year or two. I firmly believe it was by year three or four when those players who could have been there if there weren't the sanctions with the penalized number of scholarships, they would have been more of a factor the first year or two of Franklin.
Right, at which point Bill wisely jumped ship and left James to get the blame for, quote, ruining Christian Hackenberg. Meanwhile, he had the equivalent of you and me blocking for him on the offensive line.
Exactly. And because offensive linemen typically take a couple years to mature and be out on the field, the fact that O'Brien said, hey, I'm not gonna recruit offensive linemen, it's not gonna affect me this first year or two. And perhaps the top part of all this that bothered me, Chris, was he started out that first year losing to Ohio and Virginia, right?
Yep.
Perhaps the smartest thing he ever did was underachieving those two games. Because at this point, the narrative is, look at Penn State. They'll be lucky to win a game this year. When really, there's no way in the world sanctions or no sanctions, that Penn State team should have lost to Ohio, okay? No way in the world. At that point, in my opinion, Bill O'Brien should have been eliminated from any Coach of the Year candidacy. He should have been eliminated from any average Coach of the Year. You don't lose that kind of game. But because he did, starts 0-2, when they finish 8-4, oh my goodness, look at Bill O'Brien, the miracle worker. He's National Coach of the Year. Now, am I too harsh on him for this, Chris?
Yes. Yes. This is an astonishing take, frankly. And I hesitate to just say point blank that you're wrong. So let me instead offer what they call in the political world.
You wouldn't be the first one to do that to me, Chris. So it's all right. Go ahead for it. Go for it.
I will offer what they call in the political world counterfactuals to what you just said. Okay. So let's work backwards from the Coach of the Year point. Let's think about how that team began the year and how they finished it, which was at home beating a ranked Wisconsin team that happened to have the running back who had scored the most rushing touchdowns in a single season. By the way, a record he set against Penn State, but they nevertheless lost the game, the key point. So, if nothing else, you can look at those two bookends to the 2012 season and see all of the growth and development that happened from when Bill came in the most circus-like environment you can imagine, taking over a team that had been recruited to play for Joe Paterno and managed to get them to gel into a unit that was winning against tough Big Ten opponents, and finishing off the year with what I felt was like the storybook ending for that team by beating a ranked Wisconsin team. So I do think when you talk about Coach of the Year, part of it is, you know, if you hit some bumps early, what happens from there? The point about recruiting offensive linemen, I think, is fair, other than to say when you're in modern college football and you're capped at 65 scholarships, you're going to have to make concessions somewhere. So Bill's idea that given his scheme, we're going to stack up on skill position guys and we're going to try to scheme our way around the weaknesses we have on the offensive line, that might not have been the ideal way to approach it, but it was a way to approach it. And I'm not sure any ideal approach exists. At the end of the day, 65 is 65. So I don't think at least in 2012, as he was laying the groundwork for how he was going to recruit that team, I don't know that he was thinking, oh, well, I'll be gone to an NFL team in 24 months. So who cares if the next guy has to deal with pulling walk-on defensive linemen and throwing them out there. So I'll give him a little grace there. And to the point about the roster composition and how many guys actually left, I don't think you can have that conversation in a vacuum. I think Bill and his leadership, both the times when he saw necessary to step to the fore and the times when he demonstrated, I think, the critical wisdom to step back and recognize that Mowdy and Zordich were the guys to take the lead on that. Some of the other seniors on that team, Steph Morris and Jordan Hill. I think as much as anything Bill said or did during that time, calling in the Letterman and, you know, working the phones, I think just recognizing, hey, these guys are the ones who are going to keep this team together, and I'm just going to empower them to do what they do. I think that was one of the best leadership decisions made in the entire process of keeping that team held together. And I give Bill O'Brien a ton of credit for having the discernment and the humility in the moment to do that. And I want to shout out John U. Bacon, the euphoric Michigan guy enjoying that national championship, who wrote the book Fourth and Long, just happened to be embedded with the program and, you know, institutionalized a lot of that process from behind the scenes that we otherwise would know almost nothing about. And when you talk to those kids John wrote about in his book, and he's been saying to all his fellow Michigan fans this week, hey, don't clown the Bill O'Brien hire. I watched this guy up close. He's a leader. He's a developer of quarterbacks. He's a shrewd offensive mind. The kids who played for Bill love him. And so I think that Ohio loss can be written off to just the psychological turmoil of everything they went through in the preceding 12 months and his ability to hold it together and then right the ship That's the perspective I come to it from. Now, what I think is funny, Jim, is the reason John U. Bacon has to tell all the Michigan fans, hey, don't be laughing in your sleeves at this hire, is that basically everything Bill has done professionally since he left Happy Valley has done nothing but lower his esteem, sometimes fairly, sometimes not. He was a complete catastrophe as a manager of personnel in the NFL. NFL owners, do not let your coaches be the GM ever. It's never worked. Like, you know, the wide receiver trade he made, with Hopkins, insanity. Like, people think nationally, people look at him and they think the guy's a clown. And then, you know, I think you can point to the stats Bryce Young had as a quarterback at Alabama and say, again, this is a guy who knows how to coach quarterbacks. On the other hand, Alabama fans expect rings, and he didn't get one. And so they were happy to run him out of town. They were thrilled when Belichick called and brought him back to New England. Of course, there's a joke circulating around this week about all the years he spent with Bill Belichick and Nick Saban and never got a ring. And, you know, correlation is not causation, Jim. And yet, nevertheless, that's a difficult needle to thread. So I think back to some of the crazy calls he made, some of the things you didn't like so much, I'm guessing, as a Penn State fan, like going for it on fourth down, questionable offensive play calls. And at the time, you thought, well, he's just playing with house money. We're not worried about our bowl game. You know, the kicker stinks. This is probably just a situational thing, that if this were a more serious, like, bowl contending team, he wouldn't be doing this. But now I think back on it, and I think, well, no, maybe that was just Bill. And maybe it was just lightning in a bottle. And he's never going to quite recapture the esteem and the glory he had for those 2 years here at Penn State. Nevertheless, when we needed him most, he was at his best, and I'm thankful for it. And we'll see what happens in Columbus. We'll see maybe now whether or not he's what the country thinks he is, or what I think the majority of Penn State fans believe him to be, because that is a roster that's built to win a national championship or bust.
It is definitely a roster built to win championships. And as you point out, he was at Alabama. He was at New England. You know, when you have Tom Brady as your quarterback and you're a quarterback coach or offensive coordinator, you know, how much credit could you possibly take for it?
Yeah, crash the Maserati, Bill.
Yes. So I'm not.
I love Matt McGloin, by the way. Everybody nominate him for Board of Trustees if you're an alumnus. But that guy was not a Maserati. And yet, after 1 year with Bill, he was the program leader in passing yards and played in the league for several years.
All right. When we come back, we're going to change topics. But first, I'm going to ask you to compare offensive coordinator hires in Columbus and in Happy Valley. Stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We had a fun conversation quarter number one, talking about the hire of Bill O'Brien as the offensive coordinator for Ohio State. We finished this, Chris, with Bill O'Brien hired as the new offensive coordinator at Ohio State, Andy Kotelnicki hired as the new offensive coordinator at Penn State. Which is the better hire?
Well, my first instinct is to say I like the Kotelnicki hire a lot. Now, the thing that gives me acid reflux, Jim, is that I like the Kotelnicki hire as much as I liked the Mike Yurcich hire. So now I'm going to question my gut on that. If you're out there, oh, I admit it, I'm wrong. Guess what? You probably did too. I am not alone in having liked the Mike Yurcich hire a lot. The thing with Bill going to Columbus I just sang Bill's praises, and I think very highly of Bill O'Brien. I love him personally as a Penn State fan. I will always feel indebted to him. I'm one of those people who'd be fine with the guy getting a standing ovation when he comes to coach at Penn State this fall, but he's probably going to be in the booth, and that's probably not going to happen. But it's kind of like the Detroit Lions fans booing Matt Stafford, right? Once you're on the enemy team, you're on the enemy team. I get it. I understand. I think they're both very smart offensive minds. I think they're both good coaches. What I like about Kotelnicki coming to Happy Valley is that, number one, we have already seen that James Franklin is capable. He is constitutionally capable of handing the reins of his offense over to a coach who is competent to be the quote-unquote head coach of that side of the ball, because he did that with Joe Moorhead. And one of my big questions in Columbus is, how is it going to work with Ryan Day, who has always been the mastermind of the offense? He's always been the boss calling the plays. And Bill O'Brien, who, as we know, Jim, is something of a combustible personality with strong opinions on things and no hesitation to express them vocally. How is it going to work with those two guys the first time the rubber really hits the road in conference play? Because I'm not sure that the chemistry is going to be great. If you look at Bill O'Brien's coaching career, not since he was a coach at Maryland, with James Franklin, by the way, under Ralph Friedgen, has he coached for a guy who was an offensive coach. Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, those guys are cut from the same cloth. I mean, in many ways, they're practically the same human being, and they're defensive guys. And the rest of the time, Bill's been in charge. So what's it going to be like when he deals with Ryan Day, who is a very different personality from Nick or Bill Belichick? And Ryan Day has to deal with this other strong personality who is just as much of an offensive guy as he is, and frankly has a more impressive resume in terms of his coaching experience. And again, has showed a propensity to just blow his stack at the drop of a hat. So just the fact that I don't know exactly how Bill, in terms of his personality or in terms of his scheme, frankly, is going to fit in at Ohio State versus when I look at Kotelnicki, I feel a lot more comfortable that he's going to integrate quickly into the coaching staff. And you just look at film study of what he was doing at Kansas, and you can say, yeah, man, I can see how that will fit Penn State's personnel in 2024 like a glove, up to and including the fact that he's got two quarterbacks with different skill sets who he can deploy as part of his overall plan. I think just the fact that I feel like I see the puzzle pieces fitting together a little bit more smoothly and easily at Penn State, I would give the nod to James Franklin and Andy Kotelnicki. Now, the flip side of it is it's less about the X's and the O's and more about the Jimmies and the Joes, right? No one in the Big Ten has better Jimmies or Joes than Ohio State, so it may not matter a whole heck of a lot.
Well, that's the thing. Give Bill O'Brien credit. He goes from New England to Alabama to Ohio State. So he's going to places with a lot of talent capable of winning championships. So give him credit for doing that.
No, I will tell you, going back to the don't crash the Maserati analogy, that if you talk to a lot of Alabama fans, what they'll tell you is like, yeah, Bill didn't run the car off the road, but that's because he was driving 45 on the highway. Like, there are a lot of Crimson Tide fans who feel like Bill O'Brien just did not maximize the potential of the talent at his disposal at Alabama.
Which this leads me, though, to the question of, I don't like in professional sports, and I guess in college sports also you see it, perhaps they're one and the same now, but the rehash, it's the same guys get hired over and over again.
Right.
Bill O'Brien now has built enough of a reputation, again, on his resume, New England a couple times. He gets a head coaching job in the NFL. He gets an Alabama coordinator job, goes back to New England for a coordinator job, gets to Ohio State with a coordinator job. I like the idea that with Kotal Nikki, that you're going elsewhere. You're not just taking that same guy who's been there forever, so he must be good because he's got the experience and been there. Again, I'm not sure how much, you know, it's when Tom Brady's your quarterback and Belichick is your head coach, I think you put it best. Don't crash the Maserati. So how much of it is just he didn't crash the vehicle versus he's a good driver? It's an interesting discussion, and we'll all be curious to see what that Ohio State offense looks like. And remember, he's going into another place like Alabama. You know, if they go 11-1 and lose to Michigan, it was not a successful season.
Well, so, I think that's an interesting point because, you know, you talk about the appeal of certain job openings. Ohio State is always going to be an attractive job opening for a coach, whether it's an assistant or position coach or obviously a head coach. But the pressure that comes with that is acute. And it is coming to a head in Columbus because, again, like you said, they don't care about the other 11 games on the schedule. They take those for granted. There's only one that they really care about, and you saw it happen to John Cooper. That guy, back in the 90s, had rosters that were stacked top to bottom with NFL talent, and they won double-digit games practically every single year under him, but he couldn't get past Lloyd Carr in Michigan, and he got a pink slip as a result of it. And you can see that starting to build in Columbus, and now you have Bill O'Brien come in, which, again, most fans don't view him as the man who helped save their program. And if you happen to live in State College like I do, but probably their livelihood, they view him as the clown who traded DeAndre Hopkins for a bag of magic beans. And so if your sense there already is that you don't think Ryan Day is the guy, and everybody in the media is hyping up your team to be, you know, probably the number one or possibly the number one, certainly the favorite to win the Big Ten, certainly a favorite to be one of the top seeds in the playoffs and to win it all, and you fall short, I don't know how much more leeway Ryan Day has left. And because of this kind of narrative that's developed around Bill from his time with the Houston Texans and the whole joke I referenced in the last segment about all that time with Belichick and Saban and no rings, man, there is a precarious downside to it for him. I don't begrudge him going and getting work. It's not like he left Penn State to go to Ohio State. You know, he just moved around and this opportunity happened to open up. Again, I thought it was kind of a weird fit, but it could work out. Ohio State, the one question they need to answer is what's going on at the quarterback position. And I talked about Bill's ability to turn Matt McGloin from a walk-on with no Division I scholarship offers to the single season leader in passing yards at Penn State and an NFL quarterback. You're going to need that kind of developer of talent to fit Will Howard or whoever ends up being the starting quarterback at Ohio State. They may not be done in the transfer portal into the overall scheme. So I do think that's helpful. I do also wonder about his long-term future there. If Brian Hartline maybe decides to finally look around and move on from being a receivers coach there. Because one of the things that was appealing to Bill, I think, about going to Alabama is that he didn't have to get too deep into the weeds on recruiting. And I'm sure it's probably the same deal at Ohio State. Hey, look, we got Ryan Day. We got Brian Hartline. Bill, you come in, you develop talent, you scheme the offense. You don't have to get too messy with recruiting. But if Hartline leaves, it's going to be all hands on deck. And that guy hated recruiting back in the day when we didn't have NIL in the transfer portal. I cannot imagine, again, that man's combustible temper and lack of patience in an age when you have to re-recruit your entire roster on practically a weekly or monthly basis. So it's going to be very, very interesting. And I give the man a lot of grace. I'm not sure I speak for the majority of Penn State fans on that, even the ones who love them. So, yeah, very interesting.
Well, it's funny you brought up recruiting because here's the quote from Ryan Day referring to Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
He'll be an excellent teacher and recruiter for us. He absolutely strengthens our staff.
Well, sure, you bring him in and let him talk about Tom Brady for 5 minutes and then get him out of the room, you know, before he loses his temper.
I wasn't going to ask you this question, but between segments, we had this conversation and you brought it up. So I'm going to ask you this question.
Shoot.
James Franklin took over for Bill O'Brien. As things stand today, what percentage of Penn State fans do you think, if they were asked the question, who would you prefer as the head coach at Penn State, James Franklin or Bill O'Brien? What percentage would say Bill O'Brien?
Right now? Right now. 35. I think if you factor in the people who are still on the James bandwagon, which is a tough spot to be right now, as you and I know, and the people who probably would prefer somebody entirely different, I think it's right about there. Now, I will tell you again, I live in central Pennsylvania. I live in State College. Bill is very much revered and appreciated here. I think both because of the way his affect and personality just kind of fits the vibe of central Pennsylvania, and also because we all realize this town would have been down the pooper without that team doing what it did in 2012. So there's a lot of gratitude for him there. So maybe I have an inflated sense of how popular he is among the fan base, but yeah, about 35%.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Chris. We are going to change topics when we roll into quarter number three. We've talked a lot about Bill O'Brien. We're going to focus more on Penn State's hires at the coordinator position. We're going to do that when we come back in quarter three, so stay tuned for that. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. Chris, the first couple segments of the show, we really went down that Bill O'Brien rabbit hole, which is fine. We had, I think, an interesting conversation. It's fascinating to me, though, going back in history and talking about those couple years from Bill O'Brien. It's really one of those, depends on the angle you look at it from, just what your takeaways were from it. So,
it's one of the most fascinating sequences, certainly in Penn State, but I think in all of college football history. So if you're a historian of the game who loves to look at those little stories, the building blocks that form the narrative of American college football, I think there's a lot of gold to be mined there.
And I think perhaps the most fascinating part, and you and I were talking off air about this again, is how the media will shape the conversation and even will shape the conclusions that a lot of people come to.
Sure. And
I got a feeling somewhere during this offseason, you and I are going to have that discussion about the media and how they shape our opinion on these different things.
Jim, it might be kind of fake, at least in my case, but we're the media too. And so if I can help shape the offseason conversation in Penn State's corner of the college football world, I want to make sure that everybody at least takes note of the big hire James Franklin made last week.
Well, let's get to it. But the point you make about us being part of the media, I have these conversations, personal conversations with people, and I will go after the media all the time, really go after it until I get reminded, Jim, aren't you in the media? Yeah,
I never claim to be media because I like a lot of the folks who cover Penn State, and I don't want to offend them by people grouping me in with the same category that they're a part of.
Okay, let's move on. Let's get to the hire. We were talking about Bill O'Brien being the offensive coordinator hire at Ohio State. At Penn State, we saw multiple coordinators hired. We saw it was a big deal, the offensive coordinator position. just as big a deal, the change at defensive coordinator. Now we've got a new special teams coach, Chris. How big a deal is this?
Well, people will always chuckle a little bit when you bring up special teams. It is by far the least sexy part of a football team, and I understand that. I understand the kickers aren't real football players narrative. I get the whole thing. We spent all that time looking back on 2012, 2013, the Bill O'Brien era. That, Jim, actually, in the couple years that followed, was probably the time that got me most convinced that we don't pay enough attention to special teams. Because the thing with special teams and who the kickers are and who the punters are, I always say, you never care about it until you do. And that means something went wrong. And watching like backup wide receivers be our place kickers and punters kick the ball 27 yards and now our anemic offense can't stay on the field. And so the defense has to defend a short field because we don't have a good punter. All of those things made me realize this is often the difference between winning and losing. And if you think back to the Joe Paterno years, there was a persistent criticism, which I think was valid, that Penn State hamstrung itself by not devoting one of its allotted coaching positions exclusively to special teams. Instead, we split up the special teams responsibilities between all the different position coaches, and we didn't have a single special teams coordinator. Now, those rules have loosened up a little bit, but I've always believed, I've been somebody who believed that you got to take this stuff seriously because it's one of the little details you need to sweat that might make the difference between 11 or 12 wins versus 9 or 10. And so we talked a lot about Tom Allen being a former head coach and the importance of having former head coaches, Manny Diaz, Joe Moorhead to James Franklin. That's one of my core hypotheses about the guy, that he needs people who have head coaching experience as coordinators. Well, one of the things that I like about Justin Lustig is that he's been a head coach. And now it's at a lower level, Division II, I think, at Edinburgh, but there might be Division III. But the point is, the man has had the experience of running an entire program. And since then, since he's moved up to the FBS Division I level, all he's done is distinguish himself as one of the better special teams coaches in the country. He was a Broyles Award finalist. He's coached a Lou Groza candidate, a Ray Guy Award candidate. This is somebody who's got SEC experience. I understand his Vanderbilt, so like hearty har har SEC, right? But he's been in the conference and knows what it is to coach up against those big boys. He's been a head coach of a program, and where he's been, he's distinguished himself as one of the best in the country and had a lot of success. So it's not like it's the most important hire in the world. I get that the offensive and defensive coordinator positions are more important, but reaching all the way back to how frustrated I would often get because I didn't think Joe was devoting enough resources to coaching the special teams, and thinking about the nightmare of watching punts go 30 yards and saying, well, this is going to be six on the board for the other team because we can't control field position. The fact that James Franklin has always taken special teams seriously, that he's devoted scholarships to the kicking positions, and when they haven't worked out, he's immediately gone to the transfer portal to bring in competition. He brought in a guy like Joe Lurig, who was the special teams coordinator before Stacy Collins, who was one of the top guys in the country, came over from Memphis and immediately effected an improvement in Penn State's special teams rankings. I think that he is going out and bringing in a guy of this caliber to pay attention to those little details, the kind that could make the difference between a win or a loss next season, I think is a good sign. So it's not the most important thing in the world, but it is a data point that ought not be ignored.
It's not the biggest position in the world until it is, until you lose the game because of mistakes on
Yeah, teams. Don't screw it up, man. Like, you look at the NFL playoff games this weekend. San Francisco, the one seed in the NFC, almost blew a game because their kick coverage wasn't good. Nobody thinks about this stuff until something disastrous happens, and then everybody's looking around and saying, whose fault was that? So if special teams is largely invisible this fall, that's what we're shooting for. And I like the fact that we brought in a guy who has had a lot of experience succeeding at a high level coaching up special teams.
Well, it's another one of those things. It's kind of like the backup quarterback. Doesn't matter until you need them.
Yep.
you know, Iowa game a couple of years ago as an example, right?
Right. Thanks for reminding me about that.
And it's so if you have a position like special teams coach. Now, I don't think the special teams coordinator is as important as the kicker himself or the punter himself, okay? Get good ones of those. That's more of a priority. But this is still a priority because, as you said, it's about more than just the kicker themselves. It's about the coverage, making sure that everyone's where they're supposed to be so mistakes aren't made. Don't lose the game for me on special teams, Chris, right?
Yeah, I think the special teams coach is far more important, not in necessarily teaching the kickers their craft, but as you said, coordinating the return and the coverage units, and also probably having, I would think, input on who plays on those teams, right? Like personnel management in terms of who gets on the field for special teams is actually a pretty important conversation because you have to look at how much wear and tear are you going to put on your starters? How are you going to use those as developmental opportunities for young players? And how are you going to pick the best 10 guys in the coverage unit to make sure that you are not creating a liability somewhere because field position is critical.
It definitely is. And you talk about, you know, having input on the decision who returns kicks, who returns punts. Kudos to the guy who said, hey, how about we put Daquan Hardy back there?
Yes, sir.
Also, why'd it take you so long?
Yeah, and I know that's a staff conversation. It's not just the special teams coach. But my point is you want a strong, confident, experienced hand in there guiding that process, and then you just don't have to think or talk about it again for the rest of the season. So what, we spent like 5-6 minutes talking about it, Jim, and I hope that's all we have to dedicate to it. That's the whole point. You want to make a smart hire so nobody ever thinks or talks about punters or kickers the whole season long.
Well, this now, Chris, let's go to the bigger picture with the coordinators. This is the third coordinator hire during this off season.
Yeah, a little terrifying.
That's my question. That's a big changeover in a lot of places, and it's not a – none of them were the promotion from within where you could say, hey, just keep the ball rolling. Keep doing what you're doing. So now we may look at the offense and say, good, they're going to do something different than what they did last year. But still, that's a lot of changeover for this team to handle in one offseason.
Yeah, the bad news is that the last time Penn State had to do a mass shift turnover on its coaching staff, we lost 5 games in a row for the first time in program history. The good news is that these guys won't have to do all their installs on Zoom, right? So there were a lot of mitigating factors in that situation back in 2020. But I do worry about it. The stability is valuable in football, and there's a ton of volatility in Penn State's coaching staff. But if I were going to spin it in a positive direction, and it's the off season, the time for hope, so I may as well, right? Is that number one, it felt like, at least on the offensive side of the ball, that things were getting a little stale, that a lack of innovation, a lack of creativity, a lack of connect between the coaches and the players and everybody being on the same page and playing, as James likes to call it, complementary football, cost us at least one of the two big games Penn State couldn't get it done in last season. So a breath of fresh air might be welcome. And the other angle I will take on it is that I do think that the current generation of players, because of, you know, just the frenetic nature of communication now in the internet, social media, mobile device age, and the world of AAU and traveling sports, I think they are better wired up to adapt to sudden change than maybe preceding groups of players have been. So just psychologically, it might not take as much of a toll on a young Gen Z roster as it might other players that we've watched come up in preceding years.
I think the other part to this too is perhaps because of the last offensive coordinator, I think personality of these hires was part of the hiring process for James Franklin. He was looking for cultural fits also, and fingers crossed that he was able to do that. All right, that is it for quarter number three. More to go. Stick around for quarter number four. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number four. He's Chris, I'm Jim. Chris, interesting conversations today. It was all about coaching, coordinators, Bill O'Brien hire, Justin Lustig for the special teams coordinator for Penn State.
8 minutes on special teams, Jim. I love it. Somewhere Brandon Noble is pulling his hair out. He hates when I talk about punters, but I always tell him, man, you're a defensive coordinator. The punter is your best friend.
You know what's funny, Chris, is I have the same thing with the other guys. Ross never wanted to talk about kickers. T. Frank doesn't want to talk about kickers. In fact, if you want to upset T. Frank, send in a question. Ask T. Frank. T. Frank, tell me about the punter. What are we strategically going to do? He doesn't want to hear it. He does not want to hear about special teams.
Well, here's the reality, Jim. I've always been an old soul, right? I was born a curmudgeonly old man, just waiting for my body to catch up to my brain and my spirit. And so I understand that the entire direction of the game of football at every level is to favor the offense. I love 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I love a great defensive field position battle. I'm probably in another life I would have been an Iowa fan. I am very, very happy with a game that ends 10-7 if it's more about defensive acumen and less about offensive ineptitude. And so, to me, the ability to control field position and to force an offense to have to go a long way to reach the end zone, if you have a great defense, which Penn State is going to have again this year, that's a key ingredient in winning games. So I don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about it or talking about it, but it is important. It is important to have a Jordan Stout type player, right, who can pin the opposing offense deep and turn touchdowns into field goals and field goals into punts.
Well, as Penn State fans, I think over the years, we've grown to appreciate having that good punter. It makes a difference. You turn the field around. And as you said, with a good defense, make that opposing team go 80 yards, not 50 yards.
And I sit in the end zone in Beaver State along the goal line, Jim. So back in like 2013, 2014, I had to watch a lot of bad punts from right in front of my seats. And I'm like, usually I'm used to craning my neck to see the offense, and we punted and they're still right in front of me. So I think I'm emotionally scarred from those years.
All right, let's move on to a different topic. I had in my notes for a while here, Chris, and we've got at least a balance of this segment to talk about it. I found it fascinating. I read an article earlier this week. It was talking about the changes in the game for next year. And just off the top of my head, I'm saying, well, obviously, you know, we're going to a 12-team playoff. But there's a whole lot more going on in the game than in changing. This year we were talking portal, NIL. Next year we'll probably talk playoffs. But the other big change that I don't think we're talking enough about is all these new teams going to new conferences. Then the conferences are getting away from their divisions. Those are major changes. And let's start with just the new teams and new conferences. We know who's coming to the Big Ten. The Southeast Conference is getting Oklahoma and Texas. The Big 12's adding four teams from the Pac-12. The ACC the Atlantic Coast Conference is adding a couple Pacific Coast Conference teams. Which conference are you most intrigued by with their changes?
It's not biased when I say it's the Big Ten, only because the Big Ten is adding, you know, teams of note, right? Like, Oregon is, I think, the consensus nationally as maybe the second best team in the Big Ten for next season. Boy, a lot of people are thinking and talking. Washington just played for the national title and is now dealing with all of the attrition from the coaching change stemming from Nick Saban retiring. And USC, national brand that is coached by one of the biggest names in the sport. And UCLA is probably the least compelling of those four, but Chip Kelly will always make your team at least interesting. Like, these are four big legacy brands in the sport, several of which are projected to have an impact on the playoff race. So I think the Big Ten is definitely the most interesting. But to your point, two of these conferences that are adding teams are bringing in new members that are instantly favored to compete for the conference title. Oregon and, to a lesser extent, USC in the Big Ten. I think there are questions around USC. Certainly there are questions around Washington now, the way their roster's being rated. But people think very, very highly of Dan Lanning in Oregon. And I think, it's not a clear across-the-board consensus, but the majority opinion is that Utah walks into the Big 12 as the instant favorite to win that conference. I don't think any of the additions to the ACC, especially in year one, are going to make that much of a difference. I don't see Cal or Stanford or SMU being a major threat to the powers in the ACC. But, you know, definitely Colorado will get a lot of press because of Deion Sanders. Definitely Utah will be looked at as probably the favorite to win the Big 12. And I already talked about Oregon and USC.
And you didn't mention, how about Texas and Oklahoma going to the Southeast Conference?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, again, it's going to be interesting to see whether Texas is able to maintain the same momentum when they are playing an SEC schedule versus a Big 12 schedule and how those two teams fit in. I guess, Jim, my expectation is that they are going to have some bumps in the road making that transition. My view of both of those programs has always been that they're great. They recruit very well. Obviously, they've got history and resources, but they benefited a lot from sort of being like Florida State and Clemson in the ACC, right? Not exactly murderer's row when it comes to conference play.
Well, what I also like in the Southeast Conference, by adding those two teams and getting away from divisions, one of my pet peeves about that conference has always been, all right, over the last decade, Alabama and Georgia, the two best teams, they never play in the regular season, Chris.
Yes.
They don't. The SEC has done everything to protect their best teams.
It's amazing, right? Nick Saban retires right before that starts happening.
I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
Me too.
But the fact is now, those teams can't get away with it anymore. Even though they're sticking with their 8-game schedule instead of 9 conference games, they still have to play each other. And I think that's what's going to be most fascinating to me in the Southeast Conference.
Yes, for sure. I think when we talked last week about Nick Saban's retirement, you look at that Alabama schedule, and it is brutal. That is a brutal welcome to the SEC schedule for Kalen DeBoer. I think it is going to be very difficult for them to get through that run of 12 games without two conference losses. And you get to two conference losses at Alabama, and all of a sudden you're on the fringe of the playoff picture potentially, and the natives start to get restless very quickly.
Well, the other thing that I think it's a little bit more subtle, but I think is an issue, is in the Big Ten, we've seen it for years, that conference championship game where Michigan or Ohio State beats up on somebody from the West Division. I know in the Southeast Conference, we've gotten, you know, the Georgia-Alabama. For those two teams, there's some years where that's it. That's their only big game.
Yeah.
But now, with one division, you no longer have a gimme conference championship game. should make the game more competitive, Chris, but it also adds an extra loss to somebody at the top of your conference.
Yeah, you know, I do wonder, Jim, whether or not conference games or conference title games in the long term are going to survive, because the conferences are getting so big and they're ditching these divisions and the playoffs are expanding. And you look at all of those things in concert, and I, at least, I've never been a huge fan of conference championship games, to be honest with you. In football, I like the idea that your season meant something, not that like whatever happened in the season was contingent on one winner-take-all four-quarter game. I don't know that in the long term, as they restructure the sport, they're going to look at these things and say they are as important for exactly that point. If you have two teams that are good enough to qualify to get into the conference championship game, from a conference perspective, do you really want to guarantee one of them is going to get a loss and screw up their playoff seating? So I don't know. I think in the short term, at least, though, it's we in the Big Ten are by far the biggest beneficiaries of getting a more competitive game. And that's hard to argue when you look at the fact that the West division was over when it came to conference championship games. It's going to be nice to see the two best teams in the conference, not like the king of the good division and the king of the crappy division playing in what's basically a farce of a quote-unquote championship game. So that's going to be nice for next season, for sure, to see two good teams going at it with potentially a playoff bye or a home playoff game on the line.
Well, I'm thinking it's possible for a playoff spot to be lost by going to that conference championship games. There's multiple teams with two losses, you know, a three-way tie for second place. Do you want to be the team that wins that tiebreaker to play for the conference championship game and risk the third loss that might cost you a playoff game? My prediction, Chris, is the first time that happens to somebody is when they seriously talk about getting rid of the championship game.
That's interesting. And that's what makes next season so fascinating, because there are so many unknowns. I really need to sit down and think through these scenarios. My gut instinct says that because of the way they're doing it and just sort of the way we've seen the selection for the four-team playoff play out, the loser of the Big Ten and the SEC title games probably does not have a lot to worry about in terms of being excluded from the playoffs. Again, maybe when you're talking about buys or home or road playoff game, but yeah, go ahead.
What about the ACC and the Big 12?
I did totally different ball of wax. Yeah, no question about it. Those are the two conferences where I would say if you are the loser of that game, you could find yourself on the outside looking in. But again, I wonder whether or not you're going to look at the third or fourth team in the SEC and the Big Ten getting those playoff spots. And if you're third or fourth in the Big 12 or the ACC, you're not even in the conversation.
Right, at third or fourth. But at second, it's an argument now. If you're a one or two loss ACC team versus a two or three loss Big Ten or Southeast Conference team, do you want to, if you're in the Big 12 or ACC, risk that additional loss? We'll have to talk about that more during the offseason, because we are out of time, Chris. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.